I wrote Burn Zones. On Amazon, one of the reviewers said, hey, I really like the book, but I was looking for the Hollywood ending. I wanted to see the end where he made all, he was wildly successful. So right now, I'm on a mission. Today, I'm 56 years old. I'll be 60 in 2025. I anticipate this downturn, again, next 6 to 18 months, that it will occur, an economic downturn in our country, which will result in a contracting real estate market. And all nine businesses will do best in a distressed market. And so I think that will be a period in which we can gain market share, build our revenue significantly. And then goal is 2024. We mature 2025. I'm rolling all nine companies up together. And we are getting listed on the New York Stock Exchange. That is the Hollywood ending that reviewer wanted, but now that's what I want.
Welcome to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate Show. Whether you are an active or passive investor, we'll teach you how to scale your real estate investing business into something big.
George Newberry is the CEO and chairman of AHP Servicing and American Homeowner Preservation. They crowdfund the purchase of non-performing mortgages from banks at big discounts. They share those discounts with struggling homeowners. I also am an investor in AHP, and I can tell you certainly enjoyed being a part of that process with you, George. Do appreciate that. He's also the CEO of Debt Cleanse Legal Group, the founder and CEO of Pre-REO, an online marketplace for lenders offering defaulted first mortgages to local investors. George, you've got more than that even going on. I think you're off air. You told us you have what, 9 separate companies you're working with right now?
There's 9 separate companies right now. And people ask, well, how do you manage 9 separate companies? I learned it from Richard Branson. And what he does is he comes up with an idea and then he finds the brightest person he can, somebody who knows more about him, about that particular business than he does, and lets them run it. And he didn't just say that. He said, and then he gets out of their way. So right now I have 9 different presidents that each run their companies and run, are focused on the day-to-day operations of their individual companies. And then I'm there for strategy and vision. And we typically meet once a week with each leader. And some businesses I'm more involved with than others, but it is something where it's really hiring, getting the absolute best person, somebody who wants to build out that particular business that has that deep expertise in it. We have a title company, AHP Title Company. I hired Patrick McLaughlin, who worked at First American for over 25 years. You know, First American being one of the leading title companies in the country. And he brings that expertise to here. His dream was to build a title company. And we're helping them build do that. And it ties right in with everything else that AHP is doing.
That's fantastic. I mean, just that thought process behind it, finding the best, of course, in the industry. One of the things that a lot of entrepreneurs struggle with is finding the capital out of the gate to do that, right? You can only hire the best when there's the capital to do so. One of the things that I'd love to hear more about, of course, is your book, Burn Zones, and the struggles you had through that, and then the things you learned on that front. But coming out of, at the tail end of that book, Burn Zones, and that kind of chapter of your life, how did you find the capital to launch and grow in such a truncated timeline?
Sure. I have partners and investors in the majority of these businesses, and also the ones where we have a lot of big capital needs, we crowdfund. And that has been in part driven by sharing the story that I shared in Burn Zones, which takes basically goes back to my beginnings when I first started. As my first job was at 7, a newspaper boy. And then I started my own business a couple of years after that. And I learned early on that I had a formula basically, which was focus, persistence, hard work, and a lot of optimism. And when I put those together, even when a business wasn't, I thought it'd be great and was just okay, if I worked really hard, I could make okay into a pretty good business. And the hard work was like the absolute most important ingredient to that. But you won't do the hard work unless you're focused and determined and optimistic. If you don't see an end to it, you have to be optimistic. And many of these businesses, and this is throughout my life, they start out as something and they evolve into something somewhat different. And that's the only way. You can't say, hey, it's absolutely going to be this way, because so many times the market will tell you it needs to be something else. I mean, AHP started out as a nonprofit, and we had families come to us and we would advocate on their behalf one by one with banks and servicers. And I naively thought that, hey, if we come up with a good solution for the homeowner and a good solution for the bank, then everybody's going to be happy. And the reality is that the banks and servicers were unwilling in many cases to accept solutions that made sense. And so we had to change our approach and we started buying the mortgages. So that was the pivot that was successful. Now we bought the mortgages at big discounts. We could pay returns to investors and we owned the mortgages, so we could do whatever we wanted in terms of modifications or other solutions for the families. So that was a winning combination, but that didn't start with that. We started, it was a couple of pivots before that where we started, we just ended there.
I want to hear at some point on this show, because I think that's a cool story, the AHP preservation, just kind of how you guys figured out that you could make a win-win. I mean, except for the banks, which are selling to you at a discount. But I mean, it's kind of a win for them because they're getting rid of stuff they don't want anyway. It's like hauling the trash out. Like, I don't want this. Like, move on. I think that that's a really fun kind of business model. Does, I mean, I know I've said a lot and asked no questions here at all, but does that bring you joy or does that somehow, like, I don't know, it seems like it'd be very fulfilling in that business.
Oh, it's really fun to say. I mean, for instance, we would buy mortgages, especially back then in 2010, 11, 12, 13, 14, where someone would owe 100, the house value had dropped to 50, and we could buy that mortgage for 20. We could go in there and be just financially transformative. We could drop the payment, waive some of the delinquency. They got $20,000 behind. Hey, give us $2,000. We'll forgive the difference. Again, we paid 20 for the loan. And now your payment was 800, now it's 500. Your principal was 100, now it's 50. The most common response to AHP and some of the other businesses as well is this is too good to be true. What's the catch? What is wrong here? And the reality is it's all based on, in AHP's case, because we bought this thing at a massive discount. Now the discounts have narrowed as the economy's improved, but I think that's all going to change. You know, at some point in the next 6 or 18 months, I expect there'll be another downturn and there'll be a mass deluge of defaulted mortgages and those big, big discounts will return and we can, again, provide transformative solutions. We can still be transformative with what we buy today, but the discounts aren't as great as they were in that period.
Right. Your 9 companies, I understand that this is all culminating towards a certain goal. What is that?
Yeah. So I wrote Burn Zones on Amazon. A reviewer, and I read all the Amazon reviews. There's like 300 plus. It's always interesting to see what people think. And one of the reviewers said, hey, I really like the book, but I was looking for the Hollywood ending. I wanted to see the end where he was wildly successful. My first reaction, well, I didn't end up that bad, but he's right though. I mean, the sad reality is when I wrote that book, I was probably more financially better off 15 years before the ice storm and before all the chaos that occurred in my life. And he was right. It was just a comment and it kind of stuck with me. So right now I'm on a mission that these 9 companies, today I'm 56 years old. I'll be 60 in 2025. I anticipate this downturn, again, next 6 to 18 months, that it will occur, an economic downturn in our country, which will result in a contracting real estate market. And all 9 businesses will do best in a distressed market. And so I think that will be a period in which we can gain market share, build our revenue significantly. And then goal is 2024. We mature 2025. I'm rolling all 9 companies up together and we are getting listed on the New York Stock Exchange. That is the Hollywood ending that reviewer wanted, but now that's what I want. And I'll be 60. I have 2 13 months old. They'll both be 5 years old. They'll be starting kindergarten. Since they've been born, September 2020, I've really tried to spend a huge amount of time with them. I've been pretty successful, but I want to be more successful with that. And by that point, I'd love to really spend as much time as I can with my wife and kids. And I'll still be working. It's in my blood, but I want to be working on really high level stuff. I'm an entrepreneur and there's a part of me, which is really tough to let go, to delegate stuff. And I remember reading something from Richard Branson where he said that he starts all these businesses. And what he does is he hires the absolute best person that he can to lead the business. And then he steps back and gets out of their way. So all 9 businesses have a different president who knows more than me about that particular business. They lead that business. I provide vision, strategy, and support, but they're the ones leading that business. And that's how I want to build all 9 businesses, huge, and get listed on the New York Stock Exchange. And there is my Hollywood ending.
Man, that's awesome. I love that. I love that. And I think it's interesting, especially coming from your perspective of what downturn looks like, why you think that's coming. Maybe we didn't get into that, but maybe we can. It seems like you said you struggle though. You struggle with delegation, but yet it seems like not so much. Like from this side of the microphone, it's like, hey, you've done a pretty good job.
I've gotten a lot better. I'll say it. It's self-awareness and attempted self-discipline to keep myself from diving into Mrs. Smith's loan. Why is this not modified already or something like that? And I have to stay above that. I've been much better. The reality is there's too much to do for me to get involved in the frontline stuff. And we have over, you know, between all the companies, we have 115 employees. So we've grown a lot and I need to rely on the team to do what they were hired to do. And I'm there to support and to lead the 9 presidents. And then those 9 presidents lead their teams. So it's so far, by and large, so good. There's always bumps along the way and COVID occurred. There's certainly a bumpy ride, but it's also created opportunities. And I think we've navigated it quite well. obviously it's been catastrophic in some respects for this country and for certainly some other businesses, but by and large, we've done well. These businesses are all going to thrive in the downturn. So everything we're doing right now is like, I'll use Prio's example, which is a marketplace for distressed mortgages. So like when we first started buying mortgages, AHP, it was really difficult to figure out, well, how do you buy mortgages? And that is not something that's very transparent market. So we created Prio, which is a marketplace where individual investors can buy defaulted mortgages. They can buy one at a time. They can buy multiple ones. They can get financing on those. And the sellers are the biggest hedge funds in the country. And that business is growing. We've signed up some very large sellers. And I expect once the next downturn hits, there's still a lot of tech improvements that we need to make to the site. But by the time the next downturn hits, again, I'm forecasting 6 to 18 months, could be longer, could be shorter, which I don't think. But at some point that hits. And that is where Prio can really grow in an extraordinary fashion. But today, I'm glad the downturn isn't today because we're not ready for it. By the time it hits, I'm hoping to be ready. And I can say that for all the other businesses as well.
Prio is interesting. I mean, forgive my jadedness when I say this, but it seems like if you're going to have a large hedge fund and they're putting onesie twosies out there for the common man to buy, they're just going to put their garbage out there.
No, someone said they're not going to take their best assets. They're certainly going to take stuff that they want to sell. And that's usually, they're almost always either in foreclosure or eligible to be referred to foreclosure. But we're approaching it like, hey, if you have a pool of 100 loans that you want to put out and sell to another national note buyer, they're going to discount it because they're going to say, okay, if we get this back, we have to pay, go through the foreclosure process. We eventually have to pay a brokerage commission and things like that. I'm going to them and saying, hey, our audience are the people that will eventually buy this if it becomes an REO. And I'm telling the buyers, hey, this could turn into a modification, but it could also turn into an REO. And you need to be prepared for both. You can make money on both. And it's been well received by local investors. And so it's not just, hey, let me put the two that I want to sell to local investors. Let me put out 100. I mean, we have the next two pools that are coming on there. One is coming, it's about 600 loans from a large, large hedge fund. Another is going to be close to 1,000 loans. This is all expected in the next 30-ish days to come on the platform. It's getting close to year end. And so we're having a year-end sale event in December. We have a number of hedge funds that are signing up to be on live on Zoom, and they're going to be there as the bids come in. They're going to be committed to responding fast and trying to get as much under contract so they can close by year-end. So that's coming up. When I go to sellers, I'm saying, hey, the local buyer is probably going to pay you 5 to 10% more than a national buyer because they're going to say, hey, I don't have to pay a commission. You know, I'll get this as an REO if I get it as an REO. And so you're going to simply pick up a slightly higher purchase price because you're selling it individually as opposed to as a part of a large pool. But what's really the big challenge when we first went to big institutions about this is, hey, I'm not going to know your customer checks on 100 different buyers. And I'm certainly not going to enter into 100 different contracts with 100 different buyers. So that was a non-starter. So our solution was to come up with a trust. So all the loans that are sold on Prio get sold into a trust. The trustees, US Bank, and then we get participation agreements to the individual note buyers. And they get all the upside. They get delegated authority to make decisions on the loans. And that has been the key ingredient. So now the institutions are selling, they could be selling 100 loans on one day, and they're just selling them to the trust. And then behind it, we're selling the participation interests to the local investors. That trust has really been the key ingredient because it also allows us two extra benefits. One is about half the states require that a mortgage holder has a license to hold or enforce a mortgage in their state. And local investors aren't most of the time wanting to go and get a license and then renew it every year. But if it's held in a trust with a national bank trustee, that's exempt in every single state in our country. So that is great for the investors. And it also allows us to provide financing on the notes we sell on Prio. We provide 75% financing. Local investor puts up 25%. That's also been a big lift, I think, for a lot of local investors now. Hey, the entry point isn't I have to come up with $100,000 to $300,000 to buy this note. I can put up 25% of it and lever the difference. And people have done really well. I mean, the market's been increasing. So that's only made people, if they thought it was worth a year ago, you know, $200,000, and they do end up going REO. Now it's worth 10, 15, 20% more than that. So people have by and large done well.
That's interesting. So let's get into a little more in the weeds here because I'm not sure I completely understand. How is the trust let? So the trust buys the note or it just becomes the trustee?
The notes get sold into the trust, key part.
Okay. So that's a lot of liquidity that has to be retained inside that trust.
Think about this. Let's say a loan's sold for $100,000. Local investor is going to put up $25,000. Pre-REO puts up $75,000. And that's money that we raise from crowdfunding.
Got it.
And so that is basically the model. So the money, the assets simply sit inside the trust. Now, this is consistent with, in fact, we have two crowdfunding offerings going on right now. One is pre-REO, and they've both taken a more conservative approach. Again, based on my anticipation of a downturn, the worst thing in my mind I could ever occur is that a downturn happens and we have a whole bunch of loans out that we paid. Now the market's dropped and we're at a point where, hey, we maybe pay more than the loans are worth. I think there's going to be a significant downturn coming up. And so I am taking a more conservative investment approach. Everything, well, we're selling and we haven't bought anything of significance since probably February of this year. We bought a few bits and pieces, but the big buying for us happened in last year from July till the end of the year. We bought more, almost $100 million in loans. And then those loans went up, the real estate backing those loans went up 10, 15, 25%. So we're doing really well with those. I need to get those to liquidate, which we are intent on doing over the next several months. We haven't been buying because the market's so hot. But the new crowdfunding platform, so pre-REO. So think about this. A note gets sold at the underlying property value is $200,000. That note is going to sell on pre-REO for maybe $150,000. Now, ordinarily, we'd be the ones paying the $150,000, but now a local investor is putting up 25% of the $150,000 and we're putting up 75%. So the market, I think the markets take a significant turn, but I feel comfortable with our position, which is 25% off the market value, and then another 25% because a local investor is putting up that. I'm hoping everyone does well and they can turn these notes and everyone makes, the local investors make money, homeowners do well. But there is a downturn coming and at some point people will not do well. And our position, as in that example, it's sold for $200,000 value, note sells for $150,000. We're financing 75% of that, which is $112,500. So property value $200,000. We're under at 112.5. I feel pretty comfortable with that. That's a comfortable position for me, but I'd be less comfortable at the 150 because I'd be concerned. I'd only be giving up what we gained during COVID. So if we give that up and I'm at 150, that home's worth 150 and I'm into it 150, I'm not doing great. And if I have done that a whole bunch of times, I'd be really concerned. So I'm taking the more conservative approach. We're loaning the money out at 12%, paying investors 7%. This is what will weather the next downturn. Then when the next downturn hits, all these values drop, prices get more attractive. That'll create opportunities and maybe we go back to a different model. But I think the pre-REO model is one that'll do great during this downturn. And I'm sure we'll continue to finance loans even after, what during and after the downturn. But this is the approach that we're going to do now. And just to kind of footnote that, we have one other live crowdfunding platform offering, which is AHP Title. And their strategy is to buy government-backed Veterans Administration-backed loans. So on those, the Veterans Administration provides a 25% guarantee. So if there's a loan that was originated for $200,000, the mortgage holder suffers a loss, then they will cover up to 25% of that balance, which is in that case, $50,000. So what's attracted there is I can buy those loans once they default at discounts. The discounts aren't as great as the non-guaranteed loans, which we have historically bought, but I can still buy that $200,000 loan for maybe 85 cents, which will be, you know, 170. Now, if it goes, if I could modify the home, that's great, or modify the borrower and the loan, that's great. If I end up getting a foreclosure and the market's turned though, now I'm into a 170 and there's a $50,000 claim that I can make. So now I'm back down to 120 before I take a loss. So I think both of these strategies are, well, I think my belief is that downturn's coming and both of these strategies are going to be very prudent and appropriate for the next downturn, because what I cannot have happen is to be, I mean, I've been through burn zones in my life. I can't have, you know, $100 million invested and all of a sudden it's going to happen. All these people buying today, I'd be most concerned about people who are buying today at the top of a very hot market. And whether it's a homeowner or a developer, I'd be very concerned that the or apartment building buyer, because a lot that's been on fire too, that this market turns and someone's going to lose money and it's not going to be me and it's not going to be my investors. I've been there before. I'm not going to happen.
Right, man. That's compelling. I love your thought process behind that. Yeah, I mean, getting in on your VA loans at 60% loan to value after insurance is just, it makes all the sense in the world. I want to rewind though, just to make sure I get this story clear on pre-REO. You can buy the REO on the website. I can go out as an individual investor and I can say, hey, or buy the note, right? I put up 25% of it. You guys loan 75% of it. And is there a, just a, you said you loan that at 12%?
Correct.
To me as the borrower now, or as the person buying the note. And then it's up to me entirely on the workout strategy, if there is any. It's up to me to go to that homeowner and say, hey, you want to work this out, or is it up? Like, how does that work?
No, glad you brought that up, because it's not that easy. So all the states in our country require that a licensed mortgage servicer is the one that has contact with the consumer. So no pre-R investor. And we let investors know you cannot talk to the homeowner. Even if you drive by the property or stop or walking around the property, you cannot talk to them and can have no contact with them. So only the servicer can do that. So basically, the servicer will do two things. Almost all of these are either in foreclosure or eligibly referred to foreclosure. So usually the foreclosure is moving forward. At the same time, we as the servicer, if the borrower reaches out to us and says, hey, we want to do a modification, that's great. We will get all the documentation necessary and we will come to you as the pre-REO loan owner and say, hey, you can accept this modification, you can deny it, or you can go back with a counter and say, hey, payment needs to be a little bit more or whatnot. And that's the negotiation that begins. You as a pre-REO investor get to make the decisions on that. And also similar decisions are like when it goes, you know, do you proceed with foreclosure? Is how much is the bid that's set at the foreclosure? These are all decisions that you as a pre-REO investor make. Now, on the modification, it's very straightforward on the foreclosure bids and whatnot. People say, hey, you know, I bought this note for $150. It's going to sale. There's $212,000 due. I'm going to bid $190. And what's crazy lately, it's because the market's so hot, some people are bidding pretty close to the property value and then people are buying it. And that's great. Pre-R investors are doing very well. But these modifications, that's where I have to educate everybody on these, because the modifications, it's easy to say for especially an investor who has historically been a real estate investor to say, I don't want to do a modification. I don't want to collect payments for 20 or 30 years. My model is to kind of buy something, add value, make money, and do it again. So that's where education comes in. If somebody is qualified to do a mod, I highly recommend that our pre-R investors take that mod or counter with something that's very close and make the deal. Here's why. Because if a homeowner wants to stay in the home and you as the mortgage holder say no, there's a good likelihood that that homeowner will get an attorney, will do everything they can to drag out the foreclosure, which means for you as the pre-R investor, now you're paying legal fees each month. Homeowner's paying legal fees. You're not making any money. It delays things. The reality is the majority of these will end up going to foreclosure. And that's just historic. They get to default. They get to foreclosure. There's a high likelihood that they will end up being foreclosed upon. But there are a percentage that will modify, maybe a third of them. So if you buy three, you'll probably get REOs on two. You'll get mods on one. And the mod, you can still make money. Here's why. If you accept the mod, the homeowner makes payments for 6 months, 12 months, you can resell that mod. Today, we are selling our modified loans at more than 90% of the unpaid principal balance. So today, if you were to buy a loan on pre-REO at 75 cents of value, and then in 6 months, you've collected a down payment of maybe two or three, $5,000, you've collected payments each month for 6 months, and now you're selling it at, say, 90 cents, chances are you will come up with maybe not quite the financial return you would if you were to sell the REO, but you're still going to make good money. And so that's going to be, if your downside is modifying and making a lesser return, but still a really good return on one third of what you buy and the other two thirds go REO and you get the property, I think that's great for the pre-REO buyers.
Yeah. And I would think, and maybe I'm just wrong here, but I would think just as a standard protocol, that would be the right thing to do. If there's somebody that wants to modify, you're getting into this business knowing there's somebody in pre-REO, but if they're desperate to make a workout, you got somebody that's trying, man, do right by them. Like the ones that don't work out aren't going to work out, and you're going to get the property back, like you're saying. So, and again, that's just my own personal perspective.
If you give them the chance and then they can't make the payments still, then they become more receptive to, hey, then we're talking, well, maybe we'll give you a deed in lieu. We'll pay you $1,000 for a deed in lieu. You know, we gave you the chance, you weren't able to make it, or they become more receptive, but you need to give them the chance if they can demonstrate that there's a good likelihood that they'll make those payments.
Absolutely. I do appreciate you taking the time to come on. There's two pieces of this story that I want to grab before we sign off. Debt Cleanse Group Legal Services, if I could speak today. Talk to us a little bit about that. I'll be honest. I read the book and I found it slightly controversial in the sense that I was like, wow, like this guy's given the playbook for how to cheat the system in one respect, right? And yet at the same time, because I've been involved in real estate, I've seen both sides of this equation from the loan servicer side, where just like dirty, dirty dogs doing dirty things to borrowers. And I've seen it from medical providers or medical billing and things like that, that you just go, you've got honest people trying to do honest things and they're getting hosed. And so from the other perspective, I see it on that side going, you know what? George has given some really valuable information to people, giving them an opportunity to fight back. Because I feel like a lot of times the little guy, and I've seen it here in the lower socioeconomic realms here in Memphis, working with them with some of their loan servicers. And I'm like, these people are criminals. And I'm a pretty educated guy, and I can hardly figure out what in the world the BS they're sending me on paper. And I'm like, this is nonsense. So talk to us a little bit about, now that I've offended you and also complimented the work you've done, talk to us a little bit about Debt Cleanse Group Legal and then the quick summary on burn zones.
Sure. So Debt Cleanse, the genesis is obviously when I fell $26 million in debt, I never filed bankruptcy. And one thing happened that was really transformative to me during that time is I noticed that one of my creditors made a mistake on a very large debt, and I sued the creditor and I won, and they appealed, and the Missouri Court of Appeals ended up ruling that the creditor had inadvertently extinguished a $5.6 million debt. So that was eye-opening for me. And I said, hey, this creditor made this little mistake on this big loan that resulted in the loan going away. What about all these other debts? So I went back through collection notices, lawsuits, any records, my origination docs, any records that I have of my debts. And I was looking for problems. And what I discovered was that creditors, big and small, Bank of America, Chase, American Express, to much smaller ones, they make mistakes regularly. And like you said, mortgage servicers, most of it is unintentional and inadvertent. I'll try to take a good lens on that. But it does, they're nevertheless, these are oftentimes violations of consumer protection laws like the Fair Debt Collection Practices Act, the Fair Credit Reporting Act, RESPA, TCPA, state consumer protection laws. So when I wrote Debt Cleanse, my goal was originally it was just a book to help people with their mortgages, people that we didn't own their mortgages, but I wanted to help others that were struggling. But it ended up being a book that goes through each type of debt, whether it's a mortgage, a student loan, a credit card, collection account, medical bills, everything's in there, and step-by-step instructions to settle that debt at a discount or not pay it at all. And that book certainly has been controversial. And one thing at the time, it was when I wrote it, I was so relieved to get out of the debt. And right now that debt is all gone. I have credit cards, I have a house, I have a mortgage, and you have a mortgage at 3.5%. So I have all the normal things again. But that was I had to get through that period. But one of the things I didn't in the book, I was pretty cavalier on, I do get some negative reviews on this, is this is a credit score. I'm just saying, hey, what I shared in the book will mess up your credit score, but you will, in many cases, settle these debts at discount, so not pay them at all. And at the time, when you're overwhelmed with debt, that's all you care about. You could care less about your credit score in the future. Just get me out of this predicament. And so that's what I shared. And that's done well right now with Debt Cleanse. So now one of the challenges is that many people reading the book would reach out to me on social media and say, hey, I'm working the steps in the book, but I got to the point where I need an attorney. Do you know an attorney in Memphis, Tennessee, in San Diego, California, in Tallahassee, Florida? And I didn't. So I created Debt Cleanse Group Legal Services as a legal plan, which right now we're offered in 46 states. And consumers or small business owners who are struggling with debts, they can contact us and we will connect them with an attorney in their state that is trained in consumer protection law. And we've engaged with the former attorney general for the state of Ohio, and he has trained the vast majority of the attorneys in our network. And on behalf of our members who pay $29 a month, this network of attorneys have filed multiple class action lawsuits against creditors, multiple individual lawsuits. They've gotten debts forgiven. They've gotten penalties paid to the consumers. And most of all, in the vast majority of the situations, the creditors who have violated these laws have paid the consumer's attorney's fees. So it makes it so for $29 a month, these families get extraordinary representation. Many a times they don't know that the rights have been violated. They don't know the remedies that they have available to them. And these attorneys have been able to achieve those for them. So it's worked out well. It's gratifying to see. It does look a little odd. You know, I work for mortgage servicers, and at the same time work for a legal plan that sues mortgage servicers. It's just a sum of my experiences. What I went through has made me good at both. It's maybe helped families who, you know, we're a mortgage servicer, but we mostly service mortgages that are in default. So I know how that mind thinks because I was once one of the, I mean, my mind's been there. And so both of them, ultimately, I'm trying to help people through both. And although it does seem like an odd mixing of businesses, it is what I've learned.
Right. No, I love it. I love it. It is what it is. It's like you said, the summary of your experiences. Yeah, having seen it from both sides, it is an intriguing. And, you know, I'm sure there's a lot of really grateful people because, again, I have been front row seat at seeing some of these things where you just go, these people, and not everybody's getting taken advantage of, but have really seen some injustice done to people and they don't know how to get out of it. And it's really frustrating. So thanks for doing that. Burn zones, of course, is the story that leads up to that, right? I think we're out of time today. I know we've gone over already, but if you haven't read Burn Zones, it's Playing Life's Bad Hands. I think you can find that book on Amazon. It's a great book. You can learn more about George in that book and his story. Yeah, I think that it'll be an inspiring read. And hopefully here in 3 or 4 years, we'll get to read the Hollywood ending in Burn Zones 2. So George, thanks again for coming on the show today. I do appreciate it. If our listeners want to get in touch with you, learn more about any of your 9 various companies or invest with you, what is the best way to do that?
Sure. Go to prereo.com or go to ahptitle.com. Those are 2 crowdfunding opportunities. And you can learn more about what we're doing and how you can support it. And all our contact information is on there. So again, prereo.com or ahptitle.com.
Thank you so much, George. Have a great rest of your day.
Thanks, Sam.
Hey, thanks for listening to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate podcast. If you can do me a favor and subscribe and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, whatever platform it is you use to listen, if you can do that for us, that would be a fantastic help to the show. It helps us both attract new listeners as well as rank higher on those directories. So appreciate you listening. Thanks so much and hope to catch you on the next episode.